everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Halloween is tomorrow. What are adults getting out of Halloween? You know, some adults do dress up as their fantasy persona, their fantasy figure. And do you think this might impact personal sexual behavior? Well, here to help us sort this out is Dr. Nancy Sutton Pierce, my friend and colleague. And just very briefly, before you get to hear her voice, she is a sex and relationship author, an international speaker, a sensuality educator, and so much more. Welcome to the program, Dr. Nancy.
Hi, Dr. Diana. How are you?
Good. It's good to have you back. You were on a year ago. It's been too long. We need to have you back more often than that, but you were on a year ago. And you have lots to say, and I'm wondering if we could answer, you could answer those questions that I started out with. What are adults getting out of Halloween? Why don't you start with that one, and then we'll go on to the second part. Might this impact personal sexual behavior, the fantasy persona that you're dressed up as?
Well, I think that's a great question because, you know, we think of Halloween for children, trick-or-treating, getting the candy and all of that, and yet there are probably more adult-oriented Halloween parties and costumes and costume stores now. So we have to wonder, what's going on with the grown-ups that they're having so much fun with this dress-up thing? And I think for most of us, when we get dressed up, we get to take on a different persona and live out some of our fantasies, even if it's just at a party, getting to act a little, you know, like a rock star or a French maid or whatever else we dress up as. Even we put a wig on and we get to be a little different. It lets us jump into our creative mind a little more and out of the day-to-day life that we tend to get caught up in.
And do you think that then that can carry over into one's sexual persona, perhaps dressed up as a French maid, for example, or whatever? Can that affect one's sexuality, one's sexual persona?
Well, you know, I have a very curious mind, so I'm always curious about what people do behind closed doors. That's what took me into the field of sexology.
Yes.
So on Halloween night, I'm always wondering, you know, when people go home and they still have their costumes on, if they keep that role play going.
Uh-huh.
And I have a feeling that there's a lot of hot sex going on in bedrooms across America on Halloween night.
You know, I'm going to guess the same thing. Way before I was 20 years old, maybe 19, I was at Scripps College, and I dressed up as the movie was out, Tom Jones, at the time. This dates me, but anyway, there was a wonderful scene where Tom Jones was eating with this other woman, and it was a very sensual scene with juices of meats and everything running down their hands, and they're looking at each other and all of that. Well, I dressed up as his wench. I didn't even realize the full implications, but I thought, because I was actually still a virgin then, but I thought, oh, it'd be fun to be Tom Jones's wench. That was my dress up. I was a little naive, but on the right track, I guess.
Well, you know, we like to be free spirited and a little creative and playful. I think adults forget to be playful and to bring that joyfulness into their intimate lives. And so Halloween, or just the idea of dressing up and role-playing, can add back into that, into our serious world, a little bit of play.
Yeah, I agree with you. so many adults forget how to really play and to laugh and to be silly. And, of course, all of that makes sex so much better. So maybe if you're dressed up as a character, if you're a little shy about expressing yourself, perhaps in that role, you can better do it. I think that happens, don't you?
I do. I think I know that for me, when I put a wig on, a whole different personality can come out.
Okay, so look, I've heard about your platinum wig. Tell us more, Dr. Nancy.
I have a platinum wig. I mean, it's because I have very dark hair, so to have this white platinum bob, I wore it one time at a resort, and we were with friends who didn't know that I was going to wear this wig, and so I came walking toward this other friend of ours, and he saw me, but he didn't realize it was me. And I just kind of locked on his eyes, and he was getting more and more nervous as I was approaching because his wife was sitting next to him, and he was thinking this strange woman was going to come up and hit on him. And he got more and more squirmy in his chair until I was right in front of him. And then he realized it was me, and the sigh of relief was on his face. But it was hysterical because he really didn't know who I was. So that night, I really got to play this new character and just be a little bit ornerier than I might have been with my own hair.
I think that's great. Wonderful. If people want to call in, you need to first talk to Alex, who's the producer. And the number is 888-874-4888. Perhaps you have your own story, or perhaps you'd like to explore with Dr. Nancy a little more about Halloween and fantasies and dressing up. And because she is associated with hedonism, we're also going to talk about that and the lifestyle events. And so that may lead us into talking about threesomes, perhaps. We'll have to see where this takes us. I'm so glad you're coming back. Your next, I have to look that up. Do you have it in front of you? I think it's in December. I'll look it up before the end of the...
Yeah, I'll be back in February for Valentine's Week. That's my next trip back.
Yeah, but I'm talking about coming back on this show.
Oh, no, it's next month.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, next month. But I need to look at the date.
Okay, we'll find the date.
We'll find. I have it. I just didn't put it in front of me, which isn't a good idea. So, fantasies. We're going to talk a little more in-depth about fantasies. And there is a fairly new book by... social psychologist Justin Lehmiller, and he is focusing on people's sexual fantasies. He interviewed over 4,000 respondents, and so the data reveals 7 major themes in respondents' thousands of fantasies, and the most common is multi-partner sex. That's the most common one among his 4,000 sample, followed by power control and rough sex, followed by novelty and adventure, and then taboo and forbidden sex, and partner sharing and non-monogamy, and passion and gender bending. So, you know, what... something that's really positive about this book and some of the data is it could reassure lay people and even educate therapists or sexologists like yourself. For example, knowing that many devoted spouses fantasize about being with someone else, or maybe even watching their mate with someone else, can help professionals be non-judgmental and comforting when confronted by, say, a client who's just racked with guilt. I just feel like it would improve so many lives if people don't get so upset about their partner's fantasies, which are generally pretty harmless. Now, I happen to be, and I've never have been, a judgmental therapist. It just doesn't work. If you, right? You know about this. To have that attitude, you do what?
You can't be judgmental as a therapist. You know, if you are, you're not really in a therapeutic role. You're being a friend, which isn't why people pay you. So
that's right. You know, that's right.
A therapist has to have your own bias clearly in check before you can really help somebody else live their life.
That's very, very true. So some of the common themes of power, variety, adventure, taboo breaking, I think these are pretty core to our longing and our curiosity. And I think that we can experiment with them vicariously and even harmlessly through fantasy, and that might save oneself from unwanted consequences of exploring them in real life. Does that make sense?
It does. It does.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, look at the romantic novel that women, you know, you call it the smut or the romantic, you know, kind of light porn that women like to read or that people like to read.
That's the romantic novels.
Stimulators, right.
Mm-hmm.
And why do people enjoy porn? It stimulates the fantasy. Why do we like erotica? It stimulates the fantasy. So the creative part of our minds, there's no limit to what our mind can create. And therefore, I think if the mind can create it, and there's no harm in what the mind can create. Now, if you act on certain things that the mind creates, perhaps harm could come to you if you're doing something that's unsafe or illegal or it's non-consensual. But aside from that, you know, the mind is the playground, and that's where we should be the most free.
Well, I certainly agree with you. And you mentioned porn in there, and of course, internet porn is a visual library of human sexual fantasy because there's such an enormous range of fantasies. So you see a lot of these themes portrayed in pornography, the power, the taboo breaking, the novelty stuff. And I think it shows that porn is not alien to human consciousness, but an expression of it. And porn is what it is because human sexual fantasy is what it is. You mentioned the mind and the possibilities of imagination. And I think we should be a little more relaxed about fantasies, perhaps seeing them more as entertainment.
Well, I think they are our human right. Have fantasy. I mean, we fantasize all day long. Daydreaming is fantasizing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when somebody is threatened by what another person's thinking, that speaks to their own insecurity, not to what the other person's actually thinking.
That's a good point. Just to expand on that a little bit more, Dr. Nancy.
Well, if for example, my partner is having fantasies about, you know, I don't know, another woman, let's say, and they're enjoying their fantasy. If I'm threatened by just what they're thinking, and I want them to not think it because I'm threatened by it, I have to look at whose problem is it? Not their problem. They're having a great time with their fantasy. They're happy with their fantasy. So the person that has the problem with it is me. And I don't believe, as a human being, I have the right to tell anybody else how to think. I mean, what's going on in their mind? That is like our most private, secure space where we have every right to do and create and think exactly what we want to think. We don't get to determine another person's thoughts. And fantasies are just thoughts.
Just thoughts and maybe just thoughts. Entertainment.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah.
And can be arousing.
Very. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to really know your partner, then don't ask them what their fantasies are. But if you really want to know the mm-hmm. depths of your partner and you want to know them inside and out, warts and all, then ask them about their fantasies and just thank them for sharing that most intimate space of their mind with you without any judgment or shaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can open up such good communication, such good, healthy communication.
Definitely.
And it can then help the couple perhaps have a hotter sexual life with better communication.
Don't you think that sometimes people are more afraid of what their partner's thinking that they don't know versus what they do know? I mean, I at least for me, I'm much better able to handle the reality versus my fantasy of what that reality might be.
Mm-hmm.
So when we have these conversations with our partner, one of the things that we want to be careful about is when our partner does reveal their fantasy to us, that how we treat them in that moment will determine if they ever share another one with us.
That is so true, because you really want for the communication door to remain open.
Yes.
So many people have trouble anyway talking about their sexuality, their desires, their fantasies. So if you shut it down prematurely, that's not a good idea.
Right, and I think if we've never shared our fantasies with anyone, we don't really know what to expect. We don't know if they're going to be able to accept that part of our consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
We fear rejection and shaming and judgment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have any measurement of how we fit into this society. You know, everybody thinks that they're a bigger freak than they probably are.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're getting ready to trust and divulge that most personal thought that we've been having, that's a very vulnerable time.
It is, and a partner would be wise not to blow it, to keep those communication doors open.
Right. You might only get one shot at it.
Yeah, that's right.
You could shut that door forever if you're not careful. So you want to really treat that like a privilege, like, oh my gosh, this person trusts me so much that they're willing to share this most intimate part of their mind with me. I need to be on here and be careful.
And to be careful. For a long time, social scientists have documented the connection between sexual fantasies and guilt and shame and
right.
anxiety. So I think that accepting our fantasies is a real key to mental health. And maybe a key to relationship participation, communication.
I couldn't agree more.
Yes.
You know, I think, as you know, as sexologists, probably one of the main things we do is to give people permission to feel and think the way they feel and think.
Mm-hmm.
To normalize what they feared isn't normal. You know, and that word normal is so abstract anyway.
Yeah, a lot of
people know
you probably have experiences, but a lot of couples will say in one way or another, am I normal? Are we normal? that usually starts out in the first session by frequency of sexual relations, and so
right. What's normal?
You have to. I often say I don't know what's normal. There's such a wide range.
Yeah, I've never seen one normal. So
yeah, right.
We'll keep looking.
Yeah. That's right. But going back to pornography, because this is a big issue, and of course, since porn has this wide range of fantasies, and with the recurring themes among men and women about power and taboo breaking and all of that, so I think that having these understandings can help people calm down around the use or the effects of porn, because it's generally pretty harmless, although so many people don't think so. I get especially wives who are really upset at pornography and, you know, drag their husbands in to get fixed for this sexual addiction, which I don't believe in, but that's what they present with. So, but in general, I think people, if they calm down a little bit, that it's not only is fantasy entertainment, but pornography, well, which expresses fantasy, it's entertainment. It's not sex education, it's entertainment.
Right. I think that's the big difference, and that's what I talk to parents a lot about, is to talk to your kids about porn, because they're watching, mm-hmm. whether you know it or not, and they're looking at it as education.
Mm-hmm.
They're not looking at it as entertainment because they have nothing to compare it to. They have no experience. But people that have experience, this is a way that they can turn their brain on maybe in a different way to just the fantasy life, which makes the reality hotter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Makes the reality hotter.
Yeah.
It's true. I think that, it's always been said that men are more visual than women, but I think if women give themselves permission, they often can be just as visual. And actually, I have some couples who are healthy and sexually, they can come in actually, since I'm also a marriage and family therapist, they come in with other reasons or other issues, but I think that it's important to go with the flow and talk to each other and not be so judgmental and maybe even watch porn together. And some of the female generated porn is better in terms of it has a plot. It has lighting that's good, and they often focus on a relationship rather than just the fucking. And my dear, now departed friend Candida Royale, I'm still grieving about her death. About, I guess, 3-4 years ago, of ovarian cancer. She was way too young and to die, as she had. She made so many wonderful films, but she was the first on the scene in 1984 to create films that were more couple-friendly, and that's such a good thing.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is. You know, I think what I equate porn to with anybody that is looking to porn for sexual excitement, it's just another way to get the mind rerouted. You know, mm-hmm. we all live in a very fast-paced, busy society. We're inundated with input all the time. Maybe it's our computers, numbers, work. We have a lot of things going on that keep the mind very busy. And when you're getting prepared to be sexual, you have to come into the body, and you have to shut down some of those parts of your brain that are still working. And that's where women tend to have a lot of trouble, is not doing the multitasking, you know, not worrying about where the kids are, what her work is held, you know, who's got a runny nose, what the parents are needing from her, whatever, all the tasks that we have. And so porn as entertainment can create that shift, that little pause,
yes,
where you can reroute your thinking into something sexual and sensual and erotic, so that maybe you start to get those juices flowing to those other parts of your body other than, you know, the heart and lungs. So I think it's, you know, people misunderstand the point of it. But the people that are going to become jealous of porn are the same people that are going to be jealous of a fantasy, the same people that are going to be jealous of a flirt. They're just jealous people. They have insecurities, mm-hmm, it's their issue. It's not porn is the issue or their partner that's the issue. It's their issue.
That's very true.
Own your own shit.
Own your what? Say that last part again.
Own your own shit.
Yes, of course. Of course. And when you do your counseling, when I do my counseling, sometimes that needs to be pointed out.
Yes. yes.
And also for the blaming to stop.
Right.
Honestly, blaming gets couples nowhere except further stuck.
Yeah.
So
I mean, we don't make each other feel. We feel. Mm-hmm. We feel because,
right,
of our framework, our perceptions, our history, our own, mm-hmm, our own processing. You know,
mm-hmm,
so that's what we have to take responsibility for, and that's hard. That's hard work. It's much easier to try to fix somebody else to be different so that we can handle them.
Yeah. And, of course, when we own our stuff, as you pointed out just a few minutes ago, then we have more opportunities, too, for personal growth. We can look at where we're either unreasonably jealous or judgmental or whatever, and we can look at that. And, of course, going for therapy helps with that, too.
Yes.
So, Dr. Nancy, I think that you are in a wonderful place because of your association with hedonism, that you know that people can create their own personal porn by going to hedonism, for starters. And so tell us about the exotic lifestyle events where you're a speaker and you go on. Well, tell us about it, because there are cruises and there are all kinds of things. Tell us about hedonism.
Well, I do a couple of different things at hedonism. One is I have an event that I've created in February for couples. And it's an intimacy, mm-hmm, retreat. And that week's all about building intimacy and creating more sexual play for couples. And, mm-hmm, hedonism, it's like Halloween for grown-ups on steroids.
So, that's great.
So the every night is a different theme night. You know, there's toga night, there's schoolgirl night, there's hats and heels. I mean, they do all kinds of fun themes, and people dress up really sexy. So just having the freedom to go all out and dress so sexy, and you to feel the support of everybody present, the women, the men, the staff. You feel like you have this tribe of people that are supporting your sexual freedom to just express yourself without any expectation. You know, it doesn't happen there, well, you know, if you're wearing that, you must want me to do this to you. No, 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 that's not how it goes. If you're wearing something really sexy, you're just applauded for being confident and going for it.
It sounds pretty healthy, and it isn't surprising that hedonism is, what, a 37-year-old resort? And it has the largest repeat visit,
30.
Repeat visitors in the world. So that's impressive.
Yeah, I know people that have been there over 100 times.
Oh, really? Wow.
Well, we've been there 37, 38 times, something like that.
You and your husband?
Uh-huh.
Oh. That's great. So clearly you're getting something out of it. Of course, you're now teaching there, too, but you can also play there, and that's got to be fun.
Yeah, it's freeing. You know, Mark and I love to be expressive of our affection for each other, and so you can kiss and hug and touch and just be playful there without worrying about offending anybody.
And that's so important, those PDAs.
Yes.
Whereas on certain public displays of affection, so in certain places this would not be appropriate. But it's very kind of can add to arousal if you do this personal PDAs
let me tell you, out in public. A week in Hedo will jumpstart even a dead sex life.
I mean, really?
Yeah. It's like a jolt because you're surrounded by sexiness and sexual freedom and people that are open and honest and accepting, not judgmental and supportive. You know, that support people being sexually free. And you know, there's very few places like that in the world that you can have a whole week of that kind of experience.
And hedonism is in Jamaica, correct?
Yes, Negril, Jamaica.
And
I also teach on a cruise ship.
Tell us about the cruise ship.
I have a cruise coming up in September with the Desire Cruise Line, a Desire Resort. Now I have cruises. Mm-hmm. And this one's in Europe. It goes from Rome to Barcelona. It's at the end of September.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Lifestyle Friendly Cruise. So like hedonism, they're lifestyle friendly resorts, which means that if people happen to be swingers, they're certainly welcome there. It's not a swingers resort. So, you know, more than half of the people there are not in the swinging lifestyle, but they're in the lifestyle in the sense that they like to be free-spirited, they like to dress sexy, they like to meet people that are open-minded and have honest conversations and are friendly. So the Desire Cruise is the same kind of thing.
And
classes aboard.
It's probably mostly people in their 30s and 40s and 50s, but sometimes older. Tell us about the demographics of it.
No, I think it's probably a little older.
A little bit older. Okay.
Because it's a little higher socioeconomic group, especially for the cruise. It's a little more pricey. But I mean, I've met people in their 20s, and I've met people in their 90s. So I mean, the age range runs all over the place. Hedonism every week is a little different personality. So people, I say, if you're going to go to Hedo, you want to talk to somebody like me or go to the website and look at the weeks and who's going to be there and what the themes are for those groups. So that changes the whole dynamic. Like January is considered lifestyle month, but it's swinging lifestyle month. So if you don't want to be there with a bunch of swingers, I wouldn't recommend going in January.
Right. And so they need to talk to somebody like you or go on the website where it's clearly spelled out, I guess.
Right.
So people often have questions about swinging. And here I'm quoting from a wonderful book from Nina Hartley, and it's Nina Hartley's Guide to Total Sex. And it really is a complete book, and she writes in her book, in the chapter Swinging, : Strangers at a Party, she writes, at its best, swinging is not cheating, predatory, an expression of low self-esteem, a cop-out to avoid intimacy, inherently dangerous, mentally unbalanced, or unethical. It is an expression of sexual orientation, akin to being gay or monogamous. Those so inclined accept their fantasies and desires and seek to act them out in healthy ways with others of like mind. This is not to suggest that swinging is just a variant of ordinary social and or sexual behavior, or that those who engage in it are unexceptional. I think her comments are valid, and she puts it in the right perspective, I think.
I think what we're discovering is that there's a lot of ways for people to design relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the biggest myth that we've bought into is that there's only one way, and that's, mm-hmm. you know, strict monogamy, no fantasy, it's like the old adage, the best way to not have sex is to get married. You know, it was like there was an expectation that once you got married, your sex life was going to become void. And that was it would seem to be the default button on marriage and long-term relationships. But what we're learning when we start really talking to people and we give them a chance to speak their truth is the people that have the longest, happiest relationships have found a lot of other ways to be creative that are outside of that default.
Yes, and they might have more adventurous sex and experiment with some of these things, which goes outside of the total monogamy rule. There's a joke about. The thing that inhibits a woman's sexual desire is wedding cake on her wedding. Yeah. Now I got him. I don't have to do anything. I mean, some women have this, but not all, of course. But nevertheless, what we know is that sexual desire, especially in women, often dwindles in a long-term marriage, and female sexuality is so complicated anyway. But sometimes doing something like hedonism and having some playful fun and laughing more, because it's all set up for more laughing, isn't it?
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you laugh until your face hurts, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's great.
I'd like to speak to you to what you just said about women's sexual desire declines naturally. Uh-huh. See, I don't buy that. Mm-hmm. I think that's a myth, because I think women who are having great sex, their desire does not decline.
I agree with you, Dr. Nancy, yes.
Yes. But women who are having boring sex or unsatisfactory sex, yeah, they get tired of that. They don't want to be bothered.
And, of course, there are some physiological things, and you know this as a nurse in your background, the fluctuation of hormones and all of that can impact the woman.
I mean, I'm a mom, so... After you've had a baby for a while, your hormones are going crazy. That has an effect.
Mm-hmm.
You got little toddlers, you're up all night, you're exhausted. That has an effect.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that once you kind of get yourself back in balance physically that you're having great sex and you have a understanding, patient, creative partner, that you can't get right back on that horse, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I know that a lot of couples really get into a rut. They have a sex routine that they do over and over the same way and wonder why they both get bored with it.
So going to hedonism, the resort, or mm-hmm. taking a cruise,
yeah,
can really give a jolt to a relationship.
Breathe
life back in. But yeah. I do think some conversations are important before couples embark on this.
Because definitely.
Yeah, if they think they'd like to, like I've had clients over the years where, oh, I'm thinking about a woman. She told me that she and her husband have decided they're going to try a threesome with another woman. So as a therapist, I want to make sure that we explore the fantasies connected with that and also the unconscious, maybe even the conscious motivations. And so we take time, and I bet you do this with your clients too, like asking questions. Got to prepare for this. How would you feel if your partner was lavishing more attention on a third person than on you? And so I really think, I mean, there are many more questions, but I think that your relationship needs to have a foundation of trust and love for a threesome to work. A lot of trust and love.
I agree.
Yeah.
And the same for hedonism. You know, I think, if you are a really jealous person and you have a lot of insecurities, hedonism wouldn't be the place I'd start.
Mm-hmm.
I would start with maybe trying to go to just a nude beach together, you know, that was a little out there, a little challenging to you, but no sexual vibe or energy. Just even being naked in public can really be a kickstart. Or watching some porn that had to do with that. Reading some erotica. Testing the waters in the mind to see how you can handle. Because if you get jealous over thoughts, it's not going to go well.
If you go
to a real life place. So you do need to put those things in order. But for couples that really have a grip on their own responsibility for their feelings of jealousy, because they're natural, and they own their own stuff in that arena, having the talk about going to Hedo can really amp up your excitement about your relationship, and you, like, you're embarking on this journey together. Ooh, what are we going to do? What would it be like to walk outside and, you know, be on this beach with all these naked people, and, you know, how's that going to feel? And I mean, it can really jazz you up. I know Mark and I, for years, just talking about going and doing the fashion shows to get ready to go. I mean, we were benefiting from the trip long before we ever stepped foot on the plane.
I bet. And then also after the trip, recalling encounters.
Yes.
I want to go back to Nina Hartley.
Okay.
Who is a friend, and she's such a smart woman. Some of you may know that she's a porn star now in her 50s and still still making films and still having a good time. And she, like you, is a former nurse.
Yeah.
She made two points at the end of her chapter, Swinging Strangers at a Party. And one is, keep an open mind. You'll find things about yourself or your partner that will surprise you. You may discover new ways of turning you both on and off. So we'll come back to that, Nancy. Keep an open mind. And then the way she ends this, she has several summary statements, but I like this. Happy people are attractive. Decide in advance to make it a hot date together, regardless of what does or does not happen with others. Happy people are attractive. It's true. And can't you look at somebody, even somebody who is an older person and they're past 65 and up, like I am, and you can look at them and see that they're still sexual. There's a certain vibe about them, vitality about them. Would you not agree? And they do seem happier because, anyway, they're having hot sex.
Exactly. Oh, I love looking around and picking out the people that are having the best sex. Because you can, I mean, you can tell in a room of strangers who's having mm-hmm. great sex. They beam. You know, they have that twinkle in the eye and a little bit more of a lilt in their voice and a hop in their step. I mean, they just have more vibrancy, as you said.
Yes.
And you know, it's sex energy. And as a yogi, a yoga practitioner for 24 years, 25 years, that's part of the process is we have to keep our sex energy alive and kicking and quit suppressing it with guilt, shame, and negative thinking because that squelches our whole life vibration.
Mm.
And that's why a lot of people feel depressed. You know, if you think about the word depression, depress is to push down.
Depress is to push down, yeah.
And so they're pushing down that sex energy and that vibrancy, so they actually feel depressed.
And I think that also depression is anger without enthusiasm.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Truly.
Yeah. But what
and
do you think about...
People get angry when they're not having good sex, too. So.
Oh, yeah. They feel deprived, and they feel sad
yeah.
and resentful
and
maybe
yeah.
guilty, although the low-desire person, who's often the woman but not always, feels... She feels some guilt that she's withholding, but she's also in control of the relationship.
Yeah. That withhold word, that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a power play when people withhold what they know the other person wants.
Yeah, that's
know
right.
That
it's a power play.
Happy, and then they don't give it to them.
Mm-hmm. So the first point that Nina Hartley made, let's talk about that. Keep an open mind. You'll find out things about yourself or your partner that will surprise you. You may discover new ways of turning you both on and off. I think this is very valuable.
Mm-hmm. Very. And I think that's what part of the excitement about embarking on a journey where you're going to test your waters. You're going to find things that you don't like, and that's okay. That doesn't make it a negative experience. It's still a learning experience. I mean, we've done lots of things and had experiences where we went, okay, well, I can check that off my list. You know, I did it. I was curious. I did it. I'm not really interested in doing it again. Not my thing. But I don't need to feel bad about it, and I certainly don't want to waste my time having regret. That to me is a waste of energy. So
yes.
But I can just check it off the list. Okay, I don't need to do it again. Now on to the next fun thing that I think might be good.
That is that's excellent, and that's very true. And, yeah, you can check it off the list. And if we're curious people, we might be curious about this, but it might not fit with us at a particular time, for instance, to do a threesome. And I think that the potential for everything goes up with a threesome, from the level of sexual excitement to the degree of hurt and anguish. And some people just are not ready. That's why they got to do their homework. They got to talk
right.
about it. Maybe find a therapist or a sexologist or whoever to talk about it. Is there, by the way, is there counseling available at like Hedonism or on the Desire Cruises?
Only if I'm there or another clinical sexologist. You know, there's a lot of, there's a lot of people that are sexologists in the world that aren't clinical sexologists. They don't have a doctorate. They don't have medical background or counseling background. They have their sex educators. And that's mm-hmm. great to teach a class on technique or some, you know, different communication styles, that sort of thing. But when people get into trouble or they get confused or are starting to have challenges, you really need somebody that knows how to counsel people and has worked with people in a therapeutic sense. And they don't have anybody like that on staff. They need to. I think it would be smart, but...
Yeah, because it may trigger for some people.
Oh, it does.
Certain yeah. issues. I mean, there can be lots of positives, but also some negatives when people are put in a situation like this. It's so open.
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, in my many experiences there, I've seen very few, like, major blowouts with couples.
That's good. That's good.
But those blowouts usually have to do with too much alcohol.
Yeah,
more,
of course.
You know, more than anything.
Yeah.
But it is going to trigger you. And it's going to, but if you have a good, if you have a mature sense of we need to talk it through rather than blame each other, we just need to understand what we're feeling, understand why it feels this way, what we can do about it, where we can go from here, you know, then it'll actually enhance your relationship and your communication style. That's why the idea of fantasy and role play is so safe.
Yeah.
So safe for people that want to push the edge a little bit and add some spice, but have no desire at all to go be naked at a resort or see naked people or do any, they don't, that's not they're interesting to them, but they still want the spice. That's why, you know, ordering a couple of silly costumes and wigs and having a role play night, if nothing else, it'll make you giggle like crazy together and just have more fun. And that's bonding. That brings people back together. Mark told me years ago that his role with me is to make me crack up laughing at least once a day.
You got a great husband.
Yes. And let me tell you, he brings me to tears with laughter because he's such a goof. But that's one of our bonding things. And it's definitely a de-stressor.
Sure.
If you can make each other laugh. We know that just laughing, just making yourself laugh, it changes your brain chemistry immediately.
It does. Absolutely. Absolutely. So before the end of the show, I'd like for you to talk about the new gig. I guess it's coming up on Voice America.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that? And and give us a website. I'm going to give people the website for you. It is
called it's the Conscious Living Show, and it's on the Sexy Lifestyle Network, which is a network within the Voice America family.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the Sexy Lifestyle website, and you go to the host, the radio show host. The Conscious Living Show is my show, and we actually started last week, so it airs live every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, and then it's podcasted. So it'll be up on iTunes and all over the website and on my websites and, you know, everywhere. It's also going to be brought over to SDC, which is used to be a swinger dating site, but it's been rebranded as a lifestyle couple site or lifestyle adult site that stands for... Seek, discover, and create. It's for couples that want to live sexier, or for adults that want to live sexier.
Speak, discover.
Seek,
did you say?
Discover and create. SDC.
Okay, so SDC. Okay.
Yeah, S is in Sam.
Got it. D is in discover, and C
as for create. Yes. And so those two websites, those two companies are collaborating to create blogs, and they're translating my blogs into 8 languages, and they'll have the podcast up on there. We're going to go video probably in a few weeks, so our podcast will be audio and video. So we're getting progressive with some of the things that we're bringing out there, and we're talking about everything under the sun in terms of conscious living and making your life sexier.
I'm so glad you're coming back in December. I'll put it up on the summary. We'll talk some more. Thank you, Dr. Nancy.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Diana. Be well.
You too. Be well. Bye, everybody.
Happy feet, da da da, happy feet. Oh, I love it.